ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here. Quick word for Advantage BMW Midtown. Now, they've got some Black Friday savings going on with service oil changes, coolant. That's 1210 gray in Midtown. Now, look, I've driven a BMW for years, at least. I'm in an X5 right now. Drove 23 hours to New Jersey and back. What a road trip, and what a vehicle to do it in. Thing handled unbelievable. It's a good time to buy a BMW. Advantage BMW Midtown, though, is the place to go. Great customer service. Thanks to Stephen Prather down there. They'll cover you with sales, service, finance. It can be done easy. 3, 5, 7 series, whatever you want to get in. But get that Houston hometown advantage. It's why I shop Advantage BMW Midtown. My good friend Justin down there as well. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. So that is the number. By the way, that Spanish introduction of Soccer Matters was Mateo Bajamich. He has scored for Instituto in a preseason game already. And he was loaned back to Instituto wisely by the Dynamo, much like Austin FC did with their two players, Cecilio Dominguez and Rodney Redis, because both clubs want their players playing. So he scored in a preseason scrimmage for Instituto. Friday they will take on Belgrano, and we'll see how Mateo, the Dynamo signing, will do. By the way, also on Instituto, this courtesy of Victor Ariza, former DC United and Rapids defender Facundo Erpin, who's now 37 years of age. Now there's a name I haven't heard in a long time. All right, to the phone lines, 713-780-3776. We're taking your calls on anything. Let's get a strong segment in here. Then I've got Sasho Surovsky, who's the head coach of Maryland, won national titles. Maryland's got 15 players in Major League Soccer. They're performing tonight, by the way. A number of Maryland players, a very professional setup there. Sasho Surovsky has been pushing for men's soccer to be a two-semester sport. So he'll be on the show talking about how COVID's affected things, if the women's side of college soccer is now getting on board as well. He'll come up next, then we'll have Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Right now we go to the phone lines and Mark. Mark, what's on your mind?
Glenn, how you doing?
Very good, Mark. How are you?
Good, good, good. So obviously, you had Tab on a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about how he wanted to bring in players from within MLS who have you know, nods of MLS, and obviously go towards the youth movement. And today, obviously, Atlanta United released the players that they're going to let go, and a name of interest on there was Andrew Carlton, and I think he's a guy that was in the American youth system, right? And obviously, I think Tab would have knowledge of him. What do you think of the odds of him, you know, being looked at the Dynamo? Because I mean, I know he's a winger or whatever, and I know he had a hard time breaking into Atlanta at the time because obviously they had all the investments on his you know, spot and position in Atlanta United with, you know, players like Almiron and Tito Vela, Alaba, and stuff like that. So you think that would be a wise decision to probably bring a player like that in? I mean, because I think he goes to the waiver draft, and the Dynamo have the second pick in that draft, I believe.
I think there's a lot of people that will have their eyes on him because of his upbringing at Atlanta United. Now, they wouldn't be letting him go if they didn't think he was a part of their plan. So what happens is if they don't think the player is going to fit into their system or has not panned out maybe the way they've wanted, you know, you mention that and then you say, well, you know, he might fit in better in another system. That's what Carlos Bocanegra said, and with another club. And there's truth to that. No question about it. I think, clearly, with Tab's institutional knowledge of all the young players, if that's a player he's interested in, he would go after him. I think, for me now, with a lot of the youth being brought in, and I know that's a big part of the future of the Dynamo, and that's where you have to start thinking about Kiki Strina, Minor Figueroa, Boniac Garcia. When will these you know, two or three of them are club legends. When are these guys going to be moved on? I don't know if they're, you know, necessarily Miner's a Honduran legend. So is Boniek Garcia. Boniek Garcia is clearly a club legend just based on how long he's been here. But, you know, you've heard he wants to make changes on every line of the team. And I think that's a pretty obvious one to all of us who are watching this team. You've got to get some younger players at the back. You got to get some younger center backs. There's no question. You have to get what I think is now, you got to go out and get a midfielder that will be your best midfielder, that will set the bar higher for the guys that are there, that will make those guys even better, right? You do need another striker. I don't think there's any question. Mauro Minotas going to be now, an 8-10 goal scorer in this system, playing with his back to goal more? Is he going to be our Roberto Firmino? Is he going to accept that? Is that what he wants to do? I mean, it's differing. Who knows? Maybe Mauro Minotas is saying, look, you know, I might want to move on. No hard feelings. Maybe I want to move on because, you know, I get into a system at a different team that suits me more. And maybe not. I mean, but these are all things that possibly can happen. But there is no question that you have to complement all these players, whether they're young, you got to complement them with game changers. And game changers are going to make the difference. Gustavo Bo has done it for the New England Revolution. He's a DP. You got to get those guys correct. And they have to be people that can win you games. I love DeMarcus Beasley. You're not going to get a bigger fan of DeMarcus Beasley. Just the way he came up in the game, where he took the game, it's off the charts, right? I mean, his story is remarkable. World Cups, Champions League. I mean, this guy has done it all. It's incredible. But would I spend a DP slot on a left back? I don't think so. Not in MLS if I was a coach or a general manager. I wouldn't, because I want to spend my money on the guys that are going to change the game and win the game for me. And they're going to win games for me that I don't deserve. Another one I'd put out there, just because of Joe Willis tonight getting a shutout, right? I'd put this out to Dynamo fans, 713-780-3776. And this is a fair question. We brought in a differing goalkeeper. Joe Willis was moved to Nashville. Marco Maric came in. Has that position been upgraded at the Houston Dynamo? That's the question you ask now. I don't know how much it costs to bring Maric in. Now, Marco, I would say I like his feet better than Joe Willis. That was a big thing that Matt Jordan said about him. And he certainly, Marco, grew into the season, I think. But you got to ask yourself that question. And that's a fair question. And nobody in Houston's going to ask that question in the media but me, because nobody really wants to put things out like that. But I'm saying, is that an upgrade? And without knowing the numbers, then, yeah, you know, you have to be able to factor in the financials in these things. But I've liked Maric's feet. And I think that's important in a Todd Ramos system, and he's going to have to play off his line as well as a team that's a pressing team. So a lot of really interesting things to consider. The Dynamo have to get younger. You've heard Todd Ramos say it over and over, and more athletic. It's always going to be tough playing this system without a lot of athleticism, and they're going to have to find it, and that means youth. But then you got to complement it with the guys that are going to win games for you. Easier said than done.
Yep, I agree totally.
Anything else on your mind, Mark?
No, that's it, Glenn. Happy Thanksgiving, man.
And a happy Thanksgiving to you. And if Andrew Carlton ends up in Houston, you're the first one to call it. So big thank you there to Mark. 713-780-3776. We've got some of the John Walker, the Dynamo president, who kindly came on the show and took calls and questions. We've got some of the sound bites from that interview from last week. That was a very hot topic. There's a lot of things asked there. Aaron, let's take sound bite number one. This is kind of like spinning a wheel here. We'll see what we get out of this.
You know, the passion from the fans is certainly something that we hear, we listen to. I read the stuff on social media. I've been told I shouldn't read it, but I read the stuff on social media. And we know that this is a highly controversial change for our club. But But nothing we do at the club is done in a vacuum, Glenn. The discussion about where the Dynamo are in terms of relevance in this market, relevance with a declining fan base over the years, ever since the stadium opened, competitiveness on the field, all of those things have given us, directionally, the need for change. And, we changed our head coach last year. We're making a change to the marks, that is hopefully emblematic of a new and refreshed approach to how we do business, how we interact with our fans, and how we perform on the pitch.
So John said there, you heard in the beginning, he goes, I've been told not to read social media. Well, I mean, social media is where you get a lot of the vibe of the fans. I mean, the Dynamo use social media for their benefit. I don't know who would want to tell your president not to read it, because you can get a vibe on the fans. You can get a vibe on the fans on Facebook Soccer Matters. You can get it, in a lot of different places. I mean, I think the obvious thing that was coming into this was the fans want the focus on the competitive side of it, the team, the players. That's really what they're looking for right now. I think that was pretty obvious and out there. The relevancy is down for a reason. It went down at BBVA Stadium after 2011 and 12. The Dynamo got to MLS Cups, and then even those teams, people, I remember, even though they got to the finals, they were complaining about the style of play and that it was not exciting. It was slow. It was playing for set pieces. And that's how it progressively got. And that's why people went away as well, because the purpose of play was not like 2006 and 7, aggressive. It changed. It got slow. It got methodical. I remember the crowd jumping up and clapping when we earned a corner kick, which, that's a good thing. But there were the run of play, there was no counterattacking capability. The team did not have any threat from an athletic standpoint behind defenses. And it's a combination of things. And the eye was taken off the ball. And that's why the turnaround is not going to be easy. The great news is, as John mentioned, you got a tremendous coach. That I think has a tremendous upside. Tab has probably learned his lessons this year, and like anybody does when they start something new, just like when I got in TV, boy, did I learn lessons the first year. Good God. I learned them the hard way, but they've served me well. So that's the positive, but I'm not sure that this timing of this is great. People really want to be focused on the competitive side right now. And I think that's where the Houston fan is right now. And I hope the authentic fan can become a part of this. I really do. Because you want all fans down there. We got so much diversity, so many different communities, so many amazing cultures here that are different. Let's not pigeonhole anybody. Let's be inclusive. It's everybody in this. By the way, producer John Jago from Dynamo TV, that 3-1 win in Houston got him going. He's talking about Nashville. So they've advanced. They've beaten Toronto FC, Philadelphia Union up against it against New England. We're going to take a break. Break is brought to you by John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, presenting sponsors of this show. A big thank you to John and his firm. You can get information at DaspitLaw.com. They are bilingual. It's been a good night of soccer talk on the radio. It's going to continue. We go NCAA soccer next. And will it become a two-semester sport with Sasho Sarofsky? We're about to find out, courtesy of John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.
I'm Vlad Kendanovsky, the coach of U.S. Women's National Team, and you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Look, John and his firm, they're personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle, whatever it is, John and his firm will represent you. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. So get that representation you need with the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. By the way, that's 713-322-HURT, and they are bilingual. So that's another great option there with John and his firm. So thanks to them for getting us on the air, both here in Houston and Austin. Long time, I'm going to say friend, because I've done a lot of his college games. I can't say I've drank a lot of beer with him or anything like that, but he's somebody that everybody knows around the country when it comes to men's soccer. He is Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. He's won numerous national titles, placed many a player in Major League Soccer, and he joins us now. Sasha, how are you?
I'm great, Glenn. Great to be with you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And I know COVID's posed a lot of problems for college and the college game, and really just want to kind of get your take on how it's gone so far this year. What are the plans for NCAA soccer in the spring? And just kind of give you a minute or two here to kind of get us up to date.
Well, as most of your viewers or listeners will know, all of the college fall sports got canceled late this summer. On the eve of a preseason, we were told there's going to be no college fall sports, at least in the Big Ten. There was a few conferences that played American football, college football, and the ACC and some of the Southern SEC, Big 12, all continued to play. And they played men's and women's soccer, actually. But the 90% of the college soccer programs of both the men's and women's side had their fall seasons postponed. And now the NCAA announced in mid-September that we will have a spring NCAA championship, which we're delighted with. And that championship looks like it's set to start on February 3rd and culminate with a College Cup in Cary, North Carolina, between May 13th and the 17th. And interestingly, both the men's and women's College Cups will be at the same location between May 13th and 17th. So we're kind of excited about that, excited to maybe have a national championship in good weather. And hopefully at that point, we have a vaccine and maybe we get some fans in the stands.
Yeah, so that's Cary, North Carolina. That's a great choice for the national championships, and it's always been a great spot. Tell me a little bit about how this affects recruiting now, because you may have some players who want to extend their college career. I think that gets a little nebulous for some people.
Yeah, it's created a lot of anxiety, confusion, uncertainty for the coaches, the players, and the incoming recruits. So when the season got pushed into the spring, the NCAA followed up what they did last year with college spring sports, and virtually every athlete that's playing any college sport this year is going to get an extra year of eligibility. So this entire year, because there'll be shortened seasons, interrupted seasons, and teams will play anywhere from a few games to maybe a full season, the NCAA has unilaterally basically come out and said, this is basically a free year. Now, that sounds great in theory, but it's very complicated. The majority of men's soccer players are on partial scholarships and some are on no scholarships. So a lot of these kids who will maybe get their degree or graduate or look to move on to play professionally or go and get a job, they probably will not take advantage of that additional year. But in some cases, kids will go to grad school and go to different places. So right now there's quite a bit of movement and decisions coaches have to make in terms of roster management. And it's not easy, but it's a good thing the NCAA did really to provide that relief, but it has created some complications, but I think we can work through those.
Yeah, because in the case of my nephew, he had his final year in the fall, didn't get to play, and you know he's going to end up graduating. I don't think he's going to stick around for an extra year because he's going to have his degree and get out into the work world. So very challenging. We're talking to Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. Now, look, you've been a tremendous proponent for the college game. You've been a tremendous proponent of making it a split semester sport where you play in both the fall and spring. So I'm thinking COVID-19 has probably helped this process maybe a little bit.
Well, it's hurt, and I think eventually will help. In the short run, it's hurt the process because we were scheduled for an April 2019 vote on a two-semester model known as the 21st century model. And we had really made so much headway that we were starting to feel like we had the votes to possibly get this passed. And obviously when the world shut down in mid-March, the Division I Council really pushed all the legislations back. So we rightfully said, let's give us another year. Let's hold off and see where it's at. So just earlier today, I was met with my 21st century committee of the coaching body leaders across the country to really restart the conversation and see if it makes sense to get this back up for a vote in April. I think there's some positive developments in the fact that, for example, the ACC this year is playing the split season model. And we have three major women's conferences are playing the split season model. It's not quite the same spread out and well thought out 21st century model, but I think they're going to show that it can be done and perhaps it should be done. However, there are some economic impacts of the COVID crisis that may make us pause for a little bit longer, because right now there is real financial burden on every single campus. There is furloughs at the NCAA conference of sauces all over campus, and there is a tightening of the belt. So there is this sort of reduction mode happening, survival mode across a lot of college campuses. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't move forward to 21st century model, and we are going to be working within conferences and the NCAA to see if it makes sense to push this for a vote in April, or maybe we push it back a month or two. But it's a great idea, Glenn. It's for the players. It's for the game. It makes sense. And I am passionate, and I will not let go until the day we get this passed.
No, we know that from you. Now, I just want to bring up, like, Angela Kelly at Texas. They're excited because they're going to have a spring season.
Yeah.
They got to play a limited Big 12 schedule.
Yeah.
So in some ways, does this kind of prove or pose as a litmus test maybe for the women's game also to maybe get a little bit more heavily involved in a two-semester 21st century model, as you said?
Yeah, I think so. I think the women have been a little bit behind. They haven't been as proactive as the men looking at this 21st century model. But I do think that, you know, you got some of the most powerful conferences, as you mentioned, and at Texas is going to have a chance to experience, you know, playing a championship part of their season in the spring. So they played some games in the fall. I think what most coaches will recognize is if you can space out the time between games to have the proper rest and recovery, to have the proper preparation leading up to a game. I mean, it's wonderful. You know, there's way too many college kids getting hurt and just surviving rather than thriving in that experience. And then the games sometimes don't mirror the quality that they should exhibit. And finally, you know, I'm excited to see what a championship in May looks like. You know, whether we have fans or not, I just am excited to see what that looks like, because I do believe we're going to have a really good championship experience this year. And I think it's going to get a lot more of the women's coaches and players, I think, much more excited about this in time. But whether the women jump on or not, the men are committed to pushing this through. And we will be respectful of a timeline. We'll play it smartly of when we push. But we're going to eventually play over two semesters in college soccer.
Do you have some coaches that are adamant about not wanting to do the split semester? I'm just very curious about what the makeup of that would be. And, of course, we're not going to reveal anybody, but does that happen?
No, not really. On the men's side, you know, we've had surveys done for almost 5 years now. And we're about 92, 95% in favor on the men's side. And I think even the one or two or select coaches that have some reservations, it has a lot to do with maybe their own personal weather conditions or maybe budget conditions. So it's a very sort of, I guess I don't want to use the word narrow, but it's relative to their own world. But really, we've got 95%. I mean, it's hard to get 95% of people to agree that the sky is blue, you know, on a sunny day. Yeah,
good point. Very good. That's the smartest thing that'll be said in this interview, I think. No question about it. We're talking to Sasho Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland, really interested in this. Now, look, you mentioned this is the right thing for the players, but this is great for coaches, coaching education, men like yourself that have devoted your life to not only taking players to the highest level that they can possibly go in soccer, but also to prepare them for life. Let's face it, you are a huge mentor to all the young people that come through your program.
You know, Glenn, one of my mentors was Bob Gansler. And Bob Gansler always referred to us coaches as teachers in shorts and T-shirts. And we in college soccer in particular really understand the role of being teachers and coaches. But we are also, responsible for growing the game. And I've taken it upon myself as one of the leaders is to find a better way. I think it's easy sometimes to get stuck in a way and keep doing it over and over. It doesn't make sure it's right. And we saw an opening about 7 years ago when the NCAA came out and they said, we care about student athlete welfare. And we said, well, if you really care, then we're going to cash in that check. We're going to bring it to the table. And so we've made a lot of progress. And I think right now we're in a good place. We think we have a lot of momentum. We'll get there. I think the women are coming along. I wish they were with us. I think we'd be an upper 90. We'd pass it. But we're, it's a slow grind. We'll get there.
Sasho, before I let you go, I just want to take you into you as a coach now. And coaches will have to change now. I mean, it's not about just a little rest and recovery and on to your next game. I mean, now you're going to have more time, maybe Maybe your scouting is going to become different. You have the ability to take specific topics maybe in certain training. I mean, it's going to really be kind of different, won't it?
Well, different in such a good way, in such a great way. I mean, to really be able to, number one, do things with when you know your players are mentally and physically refreshed and prepared is an amazing thing. The second part is, you know, you're going to have players be able to compete for playing time in training. Right now, we have such a short preseason and games come so fast and furious that a lot of times, you know, if you're not in the starting group at the beginning, it's hard to get into the lineup. We also have players who will take an injury, Glenn, and they won't feel like they have to rush back and play because they might miss four games in a 10-day period. So you have so many positives, but from a tactical preparation, from, you know, you have times now. If you want to maybe, you know, switch into a 3-5-2 out of your 4-3-3 or prepare, you know, how you're going to press, you have some time to really do that, you know, to counter press these things. And a lot of times right now, it's kind of, we're doing it through video. We're just kind of like trying to cram. And now you can actually teach and you can prepare and you can go. And I think I'm excited about it. I know the coaches are, if we get to that point.
Sasha, would it be fair for me to say there were points in your career based on the condensed college schedule where you looked at your team and you were thinking about changing something tactically that might have been a little bit different and included some different things, and then you kind of said, nah, I can't do it at this point. It's just too condensed.
Well, it happened all the time. In fact, you know, we all try to have at least 1 week in the middle of the year where there was no midweek game, and we kind of look forward to that week, and maybe that was the week that we would incorporate maybe a little bit of a change, a tweak, an adjustment to prepare a team. Because, you know, when you're playing, you know, every Friday, Tuesday, Saturday, you know, with every 3-4 days or Fridays, you just have no time. You're just kind of recovering and you know, you work a lot on the mind at that point to try to get the kids in a good place so they can feel they can succeed. But, you know, you have injuries. You know, I've said this publicly so many times. You know, I feel like I have one of the top programs in college soccer, and, you know, we draw a lot of fans to our games. But I feel it's unfair sometimes for fans that come to a lot of the midweek games or to come to the third game in 7 days or the fourth game in 10 days because you're not really seeing the best that the players can offer. You know, but you're seeing incredible effort and you know, just a lot of good things, but it just not doesn't feel like a really good soccer game. We saw with MLS this year when they had to cram in about a 6-week window where they played almost every 3-4 days, and you could just see that the quality really dropped off. And then now you watch some of the playoff games and there's some time in between, and you see teams that are really well prepared, and it looks and feels like a really good level soccer. And that's what I want for college soccer.
And that's why I'm going to let you go, because we got in about an hour and 5 minutes. It all kicks off. Three games in a row tonight. It's going to be a great night. We appreciate you being on the show, as always. What a proponent for the game in this country and looking at it, not from the standpoint of just winning.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. That's Sasha Sarofsky, number of titles at Maryland. And by the way, there's Maryland players in action all over the Major League Soccer playoffs. Just going to close you out here on Advantage BMW in Midtown. Thanks to Stephen Prather down there supporting this show. You know, I bought and leased from them for years. What a machine. Drove it all the way to the East Coast to New Jersey to see my parents. 23 hours. Fantastic ride. They're going to get you set up, sales, service, finance. It is Advantage BMW. Remember this, though, Midtown. Advantage BMW Midtown. Advantage BMW Houston.com. We'll take a break. We got more to come.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
All right, final segment of the show is brought to you by Nebo Bandovic, the former leading scorer for the Houston Hotshots. Remember those days in the old Summit? Banging in goals. We had some CISL championship games there. 17,000 people for the indoor game, Houston Hotshots. Nebo wants to invite you to start your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. After finishing his soccer career, he went on to build a real estate investment empire with a multi-million dollar portfolio, and he wants to teach you how to do the same. Follow Nebo at Nebo Bandovic on Instagram for daily investment tips, secrets, and more information on how to be mentored by the master himself through his VIP program. That is at Nebo, N-E-B-O-B-A-N-D-O-V-I-C on Instagram. All right, final segment of tonight from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Jonathan Tannenwald wrote a wonderful piece recently on the Philadelphia Union, their youth development program. Apparently, they've got a lot coming through the pipeline down in Philadelphia, and there was a lot of thought and vision that went behind this. Here is Jonathan Tannenwald. Now, Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. Thanks, as always, for having me on.
Yeah, we always appreciate having you on. I read with real interest, before we get into the Union Revolution playoff game, but I read with real interest the wonderful piece you did about really the owners of the Philadelphia Union, Jay Sugarman, Richie Graham, the vision that they had for producing an academy and their own players. And with Brendan Aaronson now being a guy that's going to end up going to Europe now at a fee of $6 million and the American player becoming more high profile overseas now. It really seems like all stars are aligning for the Philadelphia Union when it comes to player development.
It's been really remarkable to watch. And, you know, it's funny. I've criticized this team a lot over the years for not spending money on top players and not really, you know, competing in the league to win games for a long time. And you've been following this team, Glenn, for as long as I have. My memory's right. You called their first ever home game down in Chester.
What a day that was. I'll never forget.
ESPN. Back in the day, you know, I've criticized them for a lot of things, but I've also, at the same time, I've always known that what they were doing with the youth academy was the right thing. And it was going to take a long time to pay off. And when they launched it back in 2013, I remember asking some of the folks who were involved then, how long do you think this is really going to take? Because I knew it was going to take a few years. And, I think they probably had some ideas, but maybe they didn't want to say it because it wasn't really a point in time with this team where the fans were really willing to hear, give us 3 to 5 years. But they did it anyway. And now finally, you know, in the last year or two, you've started to see guys come through this academy who've been really good. And then the question became, okay, you're developing really good academy players. Now can you go win a trophy? Whether that's the Open Cup, which they lost in Houston a couple of years ago, or now finally this year they won the Supporter Shield, and they proved that it could be done. Now, they not just because of the homegrown kids, but you've got a stellar goalkeeper in Andre Blake, and you've got some really smart signings around the rest of the field. Jacob Blesnes and Kai Wagner on the back line, and Jamiro Montero in midfield has been outstanding. I think he's their best player. Jose Martinez at the 6, and, of course, Ala Bedoya, who's the captain. They've got all the pieces. Now, does it mean they're going to win MLS Cup? Not necessarily. This is the most crapshoot MLS Cup win that I can remember of playoffs because of the balance and, obviously, the COVID implications, and it's all one game. We've already seen – I can't remember a crazier start to a playoffs than this one.
Oh, we've had 3 goals in stoppage time in games. And
3 games and penalties.
Single elimination, though, I think is great for finality. I mean, I really love it. Do you like it, Jonathan?
You know, I wasn't sold at first because I thought the coaches were all going to be defensive and try to not lose instead of playing to win. But I've come around on it. And, you know, we've gone through 7 games so far in these playoffs. None of them have been 1-0.
Yep.
Now, of course, that means on Tuesday, probably all 3 of them will be, but, you know.
Let me reset this real quick. We're talking to Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're talking Philadelphia Union. Let me take you into Jim Curtin, Ernst Tanner, and then the relationship with Jay Sugarman and Richie Graham, because it really seems like this 4 individuals are really, really on the same page with things, and that to me is vital.
I think they are, and Richie Graham, for folks who don't know, is one of the minority owners of the union and the guy who really bankrolls the youth academy. And the part of that academy is a full-time high school that the team runs in one of the northern suburbs of Philadelphia. And that's where all these kids have come through in recent years. Mackenzie Aronson, Anthony Fontana, all the guys who are coming up next year, we have 5 homegrown signings coming in next year. And Graham, I'll read you the quote that Richie gave me for this story that I wrote that was in Monday's Philadelphia Inquirer, and you can find it online at inquirer.com/soccer. Of course, folks who follow me on Twitter at The Goalkeeper, I've been tweeting it out all day. So here's the quote from Richie Graham. If you look at other leagues across the world, they have already demonstrated this idea that talent can be identified, nurtured, showcased, and sold. There's no reason why the United States can't do that. There's no reason why MLS can't do that. Now, Glenn, you and I, and a lot of other people who've been following MLS for a very long time, have been calling on this league for years and years to understand the value of selling players. And here now, finally, is a team that is doing it, that is willing to do it, and is producing players that are good enough to command fees genuinely in the seven figures, like the $6 million that Brendan Aaronson got, to go to Red Bull Salzburg, which, for folks who don't know, is the highest transfer fee for an American product of an MLS youth academy in league history. The only transfer fee higher for a homegrown player was Alphonso Davies, obviously to Bayern Munich. And it tells you something also. I think this is actually the more remarkable thing. That $6 million, Glenn, is the sixth largest transfer fee out of the league in league history. And it's not a lot of money on the global stage, if you think about it. And it tells you how little selling MLS has done over the years. And now the club owners are finally coming around to it, I think partly because they see how much money's in it. But the number of teams in the last few years that have been genuinely willing to sell have been the Red Bulls, Tyler Adams, Dallas with a bunch of their guys, as we know, and the Union. And it needs to be more, and it's, I get it, it's hard to convince people who are used only to the four main American sports, baseball, football, hockey, basketball. That never happens. The Astros, the Rockets, the Eagles, the Flyers don't develop players to sell them, trade them to other teams, you know? We're not used to that. But in soccer, that's the way it works. And not just because, or not just by MLS teams or French teams or Portuguese teams or Dutch teams that are not the really big ones, in quotes, you know? Every team in global soccer sells players. That's the way the sport is.
All right, let me do a reset here, Jonathan. Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're talking about player development. Now, look, Mark McKenzie is supposedly the next guy to go. A couple of other things. Jim Curtin becomes the coach of the year. Andre Blake, the goalkeeper of the year. How important has Ernst Tanner been to this club when it comes to all the things involved? And then I want to take you into something different after that. If you could answer that in a minute.
Sure. Ernst Tanner has been very important. He's the guy who has really broken the doors open and made the connections to get these players sold. You know, Ernie Stewart was his predecessor as the sporting director of the Union. He's now with the national team. Ernie really built out the youth academy, and then he moved on to U.S. soccer. And the Union wanted to go out and find a new sporting director who could really make the connections to get these players sold. And Ernst Tanner, who came over from Red Bull Salzburg, was a big part of the Red Bull organization. He gets that whole pathway, you know, and he was at Hoffenheim in Germany before that, where he did a lot of the same thing.
So this is a signing with a bigger picture vision here. This isn't just to come into the Philadelphia Union and help the Union domestically in Major League Soccer. This is a signing here that is a far-reaching signing to Europe, connections, and moving players forward if in fact, they earn that ability to do that and they're saleable.
That's exactly right. And it's you know, you've seen a number of other teams in MLS in recent times, hire sporting directors who have those connections, whether it's Axel Schuster in Vancouver. I certainly think Claudio Reyna in Austin obviously has those connections, we know.
Yep.
I hope that as Todd Ramos keeps doing better with the Dynamo, that they'll keep bringing young players through and sell them on. And then what's going to happen after that? We know, Glenn. It sounds paradoxical. If you don't follow soccer, it sounds paradoxical to say what I'm about to say, but it's the truth. More people are going to care about MLS as the league sells more of its top young players because they're going to want to know who's next, and they're going to watch for that.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, talk to me a little bit about, let's go into the Union and New England, who are you know, going to play on Tuesday night. The Union have owned the New England Revolution. Is there any concern about, you know, that you feel coming from the players or from Jim Curtin about the fact that, okay, here we go again. Again, we're playing. This is the sixth time this year, the New England Revolution, law of averages. There is something a little bit strange about playing the same team all the time and now having to get them in a one-game single elimination knockout.
Oh, there's plenty of people who are worried. You have to go back, Glenn, to the early 2000s when you and I were kicking around the league and not a lot of other people were paying attention, to find the days when teams played each other six times in a year. It's been a long time. And I don't think anybody is particularly happy about it, whether the fans of both teams or, you know, fans or both teams or whatever. But it is what it is. The Union are going to have to try to knock New England out here. And New England, as we saw, has all of its big guns firing. Carlos Gil, Gustavo Bow, and all the rest. And it's going to be tricky. You know, the Union have – this is the sixth time they've played this year, as we've said. The Union have won four, tied one so far, and only the most recent one was decided by more than one goal.
So what is it that the Union really have mastered in getting results over New England this year?
I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you. I'm not sure there's any secret sauce. I think they've just gone out and won the games. Because you think about it, they've won in Foxborough on the artificial turf. They've won in Chester, and they've won down in Orlando at the MLS's back tournament. Those are all very different environments. I don't know that there's a secret sauce to it. One thing I will say, New England hasn't been full strength for a lot of those games, but they were in the last one that the Union won 2-0 to clinch the supporter shield. Probably, obviously, a little extra oomph in the Union that day because they wanted to clinch the trophy. Yeah. But we're going to find out. And I'll tell you a guy, there's two guys who I'm going to be watching. And they're kind of obvious, but nonetheless, one is Brendan Aaronson, because next time, you know, the Union have home field advantage all the way through the playoffs. Either they're going to win it all, or if at some point they lose, whenever that is, it's his last game with the Union.
Yeah.
Because then he goes off to Salzburg. So he wants to play as many more games in this stadium as he possibly can before he leaves.
With Jesse Marsh, by the way, at Red Bull Salzburg. We're talking to Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Does a great job of covering the Union soccer in the United States. Jonathan, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the Union relevancy and how relevant they are in Philadelphia. I know we don't have the measuring stick of fans coming to stadiums, but look, you're a part of the media there. You're one of the media members in the country that I believe – really does provide a lot of critical analysis, which I think is healthy pressure needed in every market for these teams. But in your opinion, in your mind, how much has the relevancy grown and where do they fit with the Eagles and the Flyers and everybody else?
They don't. I hate to say it, but they don't. I mean,
is that a concern? I mean, does the organization talk about it?
Of course it is. But you've got so many people in power in this town who only care about what they care about. Whether it's at the, you know, I don't want to throw my own paper under the bus, so I'm not gonna. But whether it's at the TV stations or the sports talk radio or whatever, they only care about what they care about and their core audience. And it's not even, you know, Philadelphia as a whole is changing. It's a lot more diverse than it used to be. There's a lot more Spanish spoken in this town. Vietnamese and Chinese and all kinds of Korean and Portuguese and all kinds of other languages spoken in this town than there used to be when it was, you know, just a little parochial place on the, you know, it was a big city, but it was very parochial for a long time. And it's still an uphill battle. The one thing that I wonder, and we might never know, is if the stadium was in the city instead of in Chester, would it be a difference perception-wise? I think that might be part of it, but we'll never know.
Jonathan, as always, a big thank you for coming on the show. Keep up all the great writing. We really appreciate your work. Really enjoyed that article on the Philadelphia Union about their player development and the vision that had occurred there. And as always, thank you very much for coming on. And let's see if the Union will do it again to New England, and we'll get you back on the show.
My pleasure, Glenn. Keep an eye on Anthony Fontana a guy who comes off the bench a lot for this team, but he's a revs killer. He scored, I think, five or six of his career goals against New England specifically, and I think he could be a difference maker.
There you got it, Anthony Fontana. Keep an eye on him. Per Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer, a big thank you, Jonathan, again for coming on the show here tonight. That does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. The podcast's on Spotify, on iTunes. You can also get it at glendavissoccer.com. Would love for you to go over to the webpage. You can find out a number of different things over there, and also at podcastarena.com. Catch up on the podcasts over the holidays this year. Final word here for Advantage BMW. I've driven one for years, a BMW. Right now I have an X5 I've leased, I bought from them. Absolutely love the drive of the X5. I can throw the bike in the back, get the dog in there. Just a great vehicle. I drove it to New Jersey and back. Incredible. Just one of the great road trips I've ever taken in my life. Advantage BMW, they'll cover you with sales, service, finance. It can be done very easy. Get in a 3, 5, a 7 Series, get the X5. They've got all kinds of different vehicles down there. Advantage BMW in Midtown. That's what you got to remember. Advantage BMW in Midtown. Get that hometown advantage. That's why I shop Advantage. AdvantageBMWHouston.com. Thank you for your sponsorship of this program. And a big thanks to Stephen Prather and also Justin down at Advantage BMW in Midtown. A happy Thanksgiving to all of you. We have a lot to be thankful for. It's every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Central. It is Soccer Matters. For Aaron Raybould, producing in studio. For Victor Ariza, one of our also incredibly talented producers, we thank you very much for tuning in as always. Until next Tuesday at 7 o'clock Central Time, on behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Yeah!
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.